Good afternoon. I'd like to go ahead and call the Health and Social Services Committee to order. The time is 1:36 p.m., April 13, 2015. With me today is Senator Geisel, Senator Stoltz, and Stedman. We have a quorum to conduct business. We're a couple minutes late because we, towards the end of the session, we are running, of course, late on the floor with activity. We have two first hearings today. Senate Bill 65 was, I think, scheduled, but we pulled that from the agenda for a further review. And we'll start with Senate Bill 98, conclude with House Concurrent Resolution Number 9. So I'd like to invite the bill sponsor on Senate Bill 98, an act relating to diagnosis, treatment, and prescription drugs without a physical examination, by Senator Machiki, and he is here with his trustee aide. He can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and speak to the bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Peter Machiki, District O.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Chuck Kopp, staff to Senator Machiki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill today. Senate Bill 98 is simply about driving down the cost of health care in Alaska and improving access for rural residents, and prohibiting unprofessional conduct claims against a physician who is licensed in Alaska but out of state at the time of prescribing a prescription drug. 2014, the legislature passed HB 281 on a near unanimous vote to allow physicians to prescribe a prescription drug to a person without conducting a physical examination within certain parameters. The prescription drug could not be a controlled substance, and if it was a controlled substance, the health care provider is required to be present with the patient to assist the physician with examination, diagnosis, and treatment. The bill also required the physician to be located in the state. So, to be clear, a physician in Ketchikan could conduct a remote diagnosis and prescribe a drug to a patient in Glowoc, Yakutat, King Salmon, Cold Bay. You get the idea. It doesn't require direct contact. We're the only state that has a law that does not allow stateside physicians to practice telemedicine across state lines. So the pool of physicians is greatly diminished that can provide this service. Senate Bill 98 addresses this lack of physicians available to do remote consults by removing the physical in-state presence requirement. These physicians would still need to have an Alaska medical license. Telemedicine services average less than one-third of the cost of an in-person office visit and less than one-tenth of the cost of an ER visit. Mr. Chairman, as I've stated, what some physicians are concerned about is already allowed and happening in Alaska. We have remote prescription of medicine going on right now with no in-person visits required per HB 281 from last year. The only difference is that the physician may now actually be stateside if Senate Bill 98 were to pass. From the patient's perspective, there is zero difference. Further, the Alaska State Medical Board has been issuing Alaska medical licenses to statewide physicians for decades. DH, Department of Health and Social Services, has been using stateside physicians for years to deliver health care via telemedicine to Alaskans at a far more affordable rate, as outlined in 7 ACC 110, 620 through 639. And Dr. Butler is here, or his designee, to stand by to speak to this issue. So with respect to remote diagnosis and treatment of Alaskans via telemedicine, it has worked out well. Even with remote treatment, it's worked out very well. It brings down the cost, and we have not so far seen any overprescribing occurring as compared to in-person state visits, office visits. I've submitted to committee members a report of the Federation of State Medical Boards of the United States, a national nonprofit organization that represents the 70 state medical and osteopathic boards of the United States and its territories, on model policy for the appropriate use of telemedicine technologies in the practice of medicine. Notably, this report concludes that physician-patient relationship is clearly established when the physician agrees to undertake diagnosis and treatment of the patient, and the patient agrees to be treated, whether or not there's been an encounter in person between the physician and patient. Senate Bill 98 simply does six things, really. It clarifies that our legislative intent is to support telemedicine in Alaska. That prevents the medical board from blocking telemedicine to private sector insurance programs. It assures the patient controls their medical records, including psychiatric records. It removes the requirement that the physician must be physically located in Alaska, maintains the requirement that the physician is licensed in Alaska, and it provides substantive cost savings to individuals and public programs. Bill is supported by both Aetna and Premera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. In addition, the state employees, including each of us, now have this benefit. You know, I'll just give you a little story. I have two plans, Mr. Chairman. Both are Aetna, and we're unable to use that service. Where I see a real benefit is we've got something wrong with the kid, one of the kids late at night. Parents are always really concerned. You can pick up the phone 24 hours a day, not have to rush them in for treatment, and at least determine if the kid's okay or not okay, and you can wait till morning for treatment at a greatly reduced cost than loading them up and heading to the emergency room. So with that, Mr. Chairman, thank you again for your time, as well as other committee members, and I'll hand it off to my staff, Mr. Kopp, here to cover the particulars of the sectional analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Chuck Kopp. It's a short section. Section 1, Mr. Chairman, prohibits the state medical board from imposing discipline on a physician licensed in the state for rendering a diagnosis or providing a treatment without a physical examination if the physician or another physician or a licensed health care provider's practice is available for follow-up care, and the physician requests that the patient consent to release copies of records of the encounter to the primary care physician. And if the patient does consent, the physician sends those records to the primary care physician. Section 2 is a conforming amendment, and specifically, Mr. Chairman, that conforming amendment on page 1 of the bill itself, you will see that lines 9 through 14 on page 1 are deleted, and on page 2, line 1 is deleted. All that language is pulled down into Section 2. It's a stylistic drafting change recommended by Ledge Legal. The only change in this is the deletion on page 2, line 2, requiring the physician to be physically located in the state.
Okay, thank you. I'd like the record to reflect that Senator Ellis has joined us here a few minutes ago today. Do we have any initial questions from the committee members? Senator Wiesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, just a few questions. Removing the physical presence of the physician or other healthcare provider who's prescribing, let's call it the prescribing clinician, since that encompasses all the people who have the potential of prescribing. I'm looking at Section 2. And Mr. Kopp, you pointed out in the sectional, it just says a conforming amendment, but in fact something pretty significant happens here. It removes the requirement that the prescriber has to be in Alaska. That's a pretty significant change. In Section 2, lines 14 and 15 is the phrase appropriate licensed health care provider. What is the definition of that? Who is the appropriate licensed healthcare provider who has to be present with the patient when a controlled substance is being prescribed by, in this case, since it's a medical statute, physician who's not laid hands on this patient?
Through the chair, Senator Giesel, your first question, we did highlight that the physician is located in the state is deleted in Section 1. That portion of the law has been removed. Your second question, licensed healthcare provider language is taken from current law right now, Title 8, 64-364, dealing with prescription of drugs without physical examination. The law is currently worded that an appropriate licensed healthcare provider is to be present with a patient to assist with the exam, diagnosis, and treatment if a controlled substance is involved. Licensed healthcare provider, I would have to look up the definition in the definition section, but I'm certain that those terms are defined, but it's lifted out of current law.
For those listening at home, this is the first hearing on Senate Bill 98. It's obviously not going to get through that. To the process here with just a few days left, most likely. And then this is the first hearing, so we'll be setting this bill aside. So we have ample time for the bill sponsor to get back to any of the committee questions or concerns. And next question from Senator Giesel.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. I need to confirm this, and perhaps the bill sponsor or his staff could look this up, but do pharmacies in Alaska fill prescriptions for controlled substances that are prescribed by out-of-state prescribers? I'm going to check into that myself because I have an answer that I believe is true, but I'm going to confirm it. But if you would check into that. The other thing I would ask the bill sponsor, you talked about late at night, you know, child is sick, so you make a phone call and discover, oh, I don't need to take the child to the emergency room. Is that a phone call you made to a physician, nurse practitioner, PA? Who was on the answering side of that phone call?
Through the chair, Senator Geisel, a teledoc person might be, if this were legal. It's not, you're not able to do it today unless you have a teledoc within the state.
Thank you for that answer. Follow-up, Mr. Chairman. So this kind of scenario is effectively managed, particularly in the state of Arizona, that has a nurse call line, a statewide nurse call line, so that often a registered nurse will ask those questions, but it certainly doesn't have to be a physician employed by Teladoc. Just FYI.
Sure.
Thanks.
Questions, Senator Scopes?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And you say what do you envision this mostly? Is this telephone or teleconference when we hear the term tele?
So if I may, Mr. Chairman, Senator Stoltz, so when they rolled out the new Teladoc section of the plan, I just remember an employee introduction to it. It talked about how you would contact them, what kinds of things they can help you with, and the difference was that you had an MD on the other end of the line, and I'm sure in many cases that can be handled well with a nurse or a nurse practitioner or other healthcare provider, but in this case it was an actual MD. We can't use the service in this effort of bringing down the cost of healthcare in Alaska. That's where my interest lies for those cases, however limited they may be, where a teledoc might give you the right answer and the right treatment for your particular relatively minor ailment, if you will.
Just one last question, Mr. Chairman. Does this create a new billing opportunity? One of my closer family members, the pediatrician, that's just part of his life before he recently retired, is taking calls from young nervous parents like yourself, Senator Michiki, and providing counseling and basically talking about the ledge on but unlike a lawyer, he didn't have a little timer on his phone, and that was just part of the job. Does this create a new billing opportunity, perhaps?
Right. Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, it's our fourth child, so our bar is much higher than it used to be. It pretty much takes an amputation to get us concerned right now. But, I think the effort nationally is to reduce the cost of live calls where you're actually going into an office for a visit. In a teledoc, physician can be sort of managing a phone bank and take many calls for minor ailments, and it's a much lower cost per unit.
It was just a follow but following up on the intent, is this is physicians that are doing primary care, and especially pediatrics and others, that which is almost a primary care for children, I guess, or maybe it is, but is there trying to cope with different aspects of things we're throwing at them? Does this create another billing opportunity of things that public-spirited physicians are doing as part of serving their patients and the families? Irrespective of your intent.
I'll take a little...
We can get back on that one.
I can, but ultimately I think the key is that... I think I answered it the way that I know how, is that a physician could take many calls across the country on minor ailments versus... So I think the way insurance companies probably look at it, and ultimately by the reason it reduces the cost of health care, is that many people might just be inclined to head into the doctor's office, and they're on the hook for a much higher amount versus just picking up the phone and seeing if there's a simpler way to treat something that's less serious. Is that something you want to...
I found myself going to that pediatrician until I almost broke one of the chairs sitting down at the, and I got my own. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, that concludes our preliminary questions for the bill sponsor. We're now going to go to the public hearing portion. We have several people at, on the off net, a couple people in the room, and the LIOs. So if you could start, please, when I call your name, by introducing yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the Senate Bill 98, please. Keep your comments within a couple of minutes. It'd be appreciated. We will start with Melissa Ring, please, from Anchorage. Excuse me, she's just marked down as questions, so Melissa will let you off the hook. Go to the next one. Mike Haugen.
Thank you, Chairman Seven and members of the Health and Social Services Committee, for the opportunity to testify on SB 98. My name is Mike Haugen. I'm the Executive Director of the Alaska State Medical Association. And as currently written, the Alaska State Medical Association strongly opposes SB 98. During the last legislative session, House Bill 291 was passed that expanded the use of telemedicine by allowing physicians to prescribe medication via telemedicine without conducting a physical exam of the patient and without establishing a physician-patient relationship. That legislation was introduced because the Alaska State Medical Board practice standards required in order to practice telemedicine, the physician has to establish a physician-patient relationship or have an appropriate licensed healthcare provider with the patient to assist the physician with their examination and diagnosis. The Alaska Medical Board opposed that legislation, and although many of our members at the Medical Association had concerns over the expansion and removal of the requirement that a physician-patient relationship be established, we did take a neutral position on 281, provided that there were some safeguards put in place. Specifically, the prescription was not a controlled substance. The physician was located in the state of Alaska. A physician or other physician in a practice group was available to provide follow-up care, and the patient consents to sending a copy of the records to the patient's primary care provider. SB 98 attempts to remove one of those primary patient protections, that being the physician be located within the state of Alaska. We have great concerns about patient follow-up and safety. And in particular, we'd like to point out that the Alaska State Medical Board is currently working on practice guidelines for telemedicine. There are also national medical organizations that have adopted best practices. The medical board will be meeting after session to look at these issues, and we ask that this bill be held over the interim so the Alaska State Medical Board, with input from all stakeholders, can do what it is charged to do, and that is to regulate the practice of medicine. Then next year, the legislature can review the board's work and decide whether a different policy is warranted or even necessary. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Hogan. We have a question from Senator Diesel.
Dr. Hogan, could you answer Senator Stoltz's question about whether there's provision for billing for phone consultations? I think there is in the ICD-10, but I'm not sure. Can you answer that?
I do not have an answer for you right now, Senator Diesel. So I would have to get back to you with that answer.
Thank you.
I think you'll have ample time. This is the first hearing on this bill today, and the committee will be setting it aside for further review. Next up, I think that takes care of that question. Okay. Next up on the list, we're going to go to the outside, Dr. Henry D. Phillips from Dallas, Texas.
Good afternoon. The company's Teladoc is based in Dallas, Texas. I'm actually talking to you from my farm outside of Nashville, Tennessee. But thank you for allowing me in today. My comments will be brief. The last legislative session, it was pretty clear, as Senator Machicki mentioned, that the House Bill 281 passed almost unanimously. So it's pretty clear that the legislative intent in the state of Alaska is to allow telemedicine in the state. This particular bill really has one major provision, and that is a change from requiring the physician who does telemedicine or the licensed practitioner who does telemedicine from being physically present in the state and removing that requirement. First of all, Alaska is the only state that has that provision codified in legislation. There's no other state in the U.S. that has that codified in legislation. And second of all, the situation in Alaska is that the supply-demand mismatch between the number of primary care docs and the number of services that are needed or required by the population is huge. And then, of course, there's natural boundaries that have existed for decades. The Alaska State Medical Board has been issuing Alaska licenses to physicians who are not physically resident in the state, not for years, but for decades. Telemedicine is not the practice of medicine. It's the use of a tool in the practice of medicine. The standard of care still needs to be maintained. It's just an interesting concept to note that the Alaska State Medical Association and seemingly the Alaska State Medical Board, although they have not testified that I've heard of so far, seems to want to allow telemedicine to exist for physicians who have an Alaska license and are physically present in the state, but the physicians who have received an Alaska medical license who live, for example, in the state of Washington, would not be allowed to practice medicine using this particular tool. It's actually fairly straightforward. The compensation for physicians in Alaska is about triple what the compensation is for physicians in all other states on average. The natural boundaries and the supply and demand mismatch have led to that. Basically, for telemedicine to be effective in the state, if you want to use in-state physicians, the cost to the employers and to the state, since all the state employees are now part of the program, would have to be tripled in order to cover the cost, the reimbursement back out to the physicians. It seems to make a little bit more sense, fiscally speaking, that removing the in-state requirement, which makes it consistent with the 48 other states that allow telemedicine to exist in the state today, would allow docs who have Alaska licenses and currently take care of Alaska patients who sometimes will travel out of state to be able to practice medicine using the telemedicine tool as well. If there are questions, I'm happy to take them. Otherwise, I guess those are my comments for today.
Senator Wiesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. DePhillips, are you a physician?
I am.
Okay, thank you, Dr. DePhillips.
I'm actually a board-certified family physician. I just recertified my boards in May of 2014.
Excellent. I'm a board-certified nurse practitioner of family practice. So my question to you is, the statement has been made that this telemedicine is used for minor ailments, and yet this includes the prescribing of a controlled substance. Do you agree that using a controlled substance would qualify in a minor ailment?
So that's a really good question. As you know, going through the legislative process, there's a number of sort of moving parts and moving priorities and moving people. The Teladoc program is a 50-state program, currently 48. We've got about 12 million Americans or so, done north of 700,000 consults with not a liability claim in the history of the company. We do common and complicated illnesses, and our program does not allow the prescribing of DEA-controlled substances under any scenario. That provision actually was not originally in House Bill 281, but there was some concern from the clinical folks in your prison system in Alaska, and understandably so. When a prisoner is, you know, arrested, taken to jail, sometimes they're high on drugs or sleep deprived or whatever, and they need sometimes DEA controlled substances to calm them down. There may not be a clinician like a nurse practitioner or a physician present, so telemedicine allows the prescribing of that controlled substance in that scenario. In that scenario, there's also a patient side presenter who's, to use your state's terminology, an appropriately licensed clinician on the patient side. So that's how that provision got in, but DEA controlled substances never have been a part of our program, and there's no plan to make them part of our program.
Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Dr. DePhillips. Next up, John Pappenheim.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Dr. John Pappenheim. I'm a resident of Juneau, Alaska, and a psychiatrist. And I'm calling in today to share with you my perspective that while telemedicine and telepsychiatry, when done appropriately, can provide safe and effective treatment while improving access to healthcare providers, SB 98 in its current form does not do that. And I would ask the committee to hold off on making any decisions, and it sounds like you're going to, until the State Medical Board, which is tasked by the state of Alaska to see to it that the public safety is ensured while the provision of safe and effective treatment is given, to work with them in concert in developing telemedicine policies and procedures that allow for the implementation of telemedicine in a fashion that increases access while preserving the safety of the public. So that's all I have to say.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Sheila Tallman from Washington.
Hello and good afternoon. Thank you, Chair Stedman and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Sheila Tallman with Samara Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. I'm feeling a bit under the weather today, so I'm going to keep my comments really brief. Samara provides coverage to over 112,000 Alaskan residents, covering individuals and families, small employers and large employers, as well as offering services to larger self-funded groups. I'm here today testifying in support of Senate Bill 98. Samara strongly supports the use of telemedicine as another option to access clinical services. Research has shown that telemedicine can reduce the cost of providing care through more efficient means, and in rural communities, this may be another way to obtain appropriate care. This year, Samara launched a virtual care benefit that enables all of our members to access health-related services and information via a variety of telecommunication channels. And in just a few months that we started to offer this this program, over 25,000 of our members in Alaska have signed up to access these services. So there is growing interest. Senate Bill 98 will further promote the use of telemedicine in Alaska and address some of the implementation challenges that exist and that you've heard about already. We urge your support. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony.
I just want to
Senator Stoltz, question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I forgot the witness's name, but have there been any efforts in other states to expand this beyond the borders of the United States for outreach? And I just wonder how this progresses as we looking at this as a policy issue.
Is that a question to the
person online?
Okay. Ms. Tallman, can you help with Senator Stoltz's question?
Through the chair, Senator Stoltz, beyond the U.S., I'm not sure I'm the best person to comment on that, but I do know that we have been successful in working with other providers and, you know, physicians and hospitals in the other two states where Samara offers coverage, and that's in Washington and Oregon, and they have passed bills that have further promoted the use of telemedicine, and it's been a broad consensus on supporting those bills throughout the process.
Senator Diesel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Tallman, Alaska Medicaid currently doesn't pay providers outside the state of Alaska. Does Samara reimburse providers for phone teleconference diagnosis and treatment?
Through the chair, Senator Diesel, yes, Samara does reimburse physicians if they are participating in a program, and that's one of the things that we have, you know, that I just mentioned. So through our program, we are reimbursing for those services.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, Craig Kestrin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yes, my name is Craig Kestrin, and I'm commenting on behalf of Alaska USA Insurance Brokers, and we provide benefits and insurance services to companies across Alaska to offer to their employees. We work with well over 125 different companies and organizations when it comes to their employee benefits. I'm speaking today to ask you to pass Senate Bill 98. Simply put, we need to pass Senate Bill 98 to have a true telemedicine in Alaska. Currently, the telemedicine program is in name only. Because of the doctor shortage, when healthcare is available, it's very expensive up here. Quick example, a simple doctor visit in the lower 48 averages around $50. In the state of Alaska, it's about $175. This is a tremendous cost burden to the employers and businesses as well as their employees, and it's a barrier of entry for the telemedicine program. Senate Bill 98 removes these barriers to enter Alaska market, and in doing so will help bring costs down and increase access for Alaskans. Alaska is medically an underserved state, and in too many areas there simply isn't enough good access to health care. And telemedicine would help fill that gap and make quality health care available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, anywhere in Alaska. So I believe it's a low-cost, high-quality health care is a noble goal, and that it can be achievable with the passage of Senate Bill 98. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next up, Rebecca Ling.
Good afternoon. This is Rebecca Lane from Slippin' Lake Tribal Council. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm speaking specifically about telepsychiatry services that are provided at Cook Inlet Tribal Council for behavioral health services only. Currently, Cook Inlet Tribal Council works with two psychiatrists from the University of Colorado. Both doctors are licensed in the state of Alaska and have been licensed in the state for over 10 years and have been providing services with our organization for 7 years. The services that the telepsychs provide are an integral part of services at Cook Inlet Tribal Council. We work with individuals in the substance abuse field. The majority of our folks that we're working with have trauma-based diagnoses. The sessions occur at Ernie Turner Center. There's a clinician in the building, if not in the room, with the telepsychs at the time of service. Appropriate releases of information are signed. However, many substance abuse treatment participants are uncomfortable sharing their records with primary care physicians. At this time, in order to provide services to the participants, they have to sign a release of information, which under Federal Regulations 42 Part 2 CFR creates a problem for the participants. They either have to decide to receive services from the telepsychs and sign a release, or they have to not receive services. So we don't prescribe any medications other than some sleep medications, very basic medications. So we're just speaking, we would like for this bill to be passed as well. It would help our participants.
Okay, thank you for your testimony today.
Thank you.
That concludes the off-net. We'll now go to the LIOs. We have one citizen that's come forward in the Fairbanks LIO. Cam Carlson, please.
Yes, thank you. I am currently one of the two public members on the Alaska State Medical Board. We strongly opposed the bill that was passed and had many good reasons for it. From the testimony I've heard so far, the whole thing is about money. And while the medical board is certainly concerned about money, and I must say today I'm speaking just for myself, the board has not had a chance to look and come up with a group statement on this. We look just beyond the money to standard of patient care. The bill that was passed last year did not provide the standard of patient care that we are concerned with for people that live in Alaska. It's not all about the money. The bill did not assure that there would be a health professional person on the other end of the line when they were talking to a physician. So the physician had no way of knowing if what the patient or the person calling them, if it was true, if there was any way to validate the situation. There was just no way to protect the standard of care giving there. If we've got doctors calling from out of state, it sounds to me like they're after the money. It's not that they're so concerned about care, physical care in Alaska. So I would strongly urge that you sit on this bill. Do not pass it now. It needs a lot of work. I believe that the State Medical Association will also come out a little stronger this time than they did last time in their neutrality. But we strongly oppose this bill as written. There are no protections that we can see for the patient except in the pocketbook. And the pocketbook isn't where health should be decided. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony today. That concludes our LIOs, concludes our off-nets. We'll now come back into the room. Kate Burkhart, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Kate Burkhart, and I am the Executive Director of the Alaska Mental Health Board and the Advisory Board on Alcoholism and Drug Abuse. Our boards raised concerns similar to what you heard from Ms. Ling from Cook Inlet Tribal Council when the predecessor of this bill, HB 281, came before you. And those concerns included, but were not limited to, requiring that a physician who held an Alaska license have to be in state in order to practice telemedicine. We also had concerns, as noted by Ms. Ling, about the sharing of patient records. So a lot of the conversation around HB 281 and now SB 98 has to do with primary care. My comments are about telepsychiatry, the use of telemedicine in the community behavioral health system. Much like the tribal health system, the community behavioral health system has a robust system of care around telemedicine. It has become necessary because of the inadequate number of psychiatrists here in the state. And so we have multiple healthcare organizations, including Yukon-Kuskokwim Health Corporation, Community Connections in Ketchikan, Cook Inlet Tribal Council, Alaska Psychiatric Institute, the Department of Corrections. The list is very long of organizations that utilize telemedicine, both with psychiatrists in-state and out-of-state. For example, in addition to the University of Colorado, Seattle Children's Hospital provides a great deal of psychiatric care for children in the state of Alaska. The way that that system is designed is much like Ms. Ling described. In order to be reimbursed by Medicaid, a community behavioral health center must connect with the psychiatrist at the center, and there must be a healthcare professional in the room to assist. There is a physician's relationship created at the outset to ensure the standard of care, and it is part and parcel of the way that we do business in the community behavioral health system because we just don't have the psychiatrists to serve every community. And so SB 98, by removing the requirement that a physician be located in the state to avoid the possibility of sanction, is something that we appreciate. We raised this last year during the legislative session and again with the medical board in the fall when we asked for some emergency regulations to alleviate the concerns of our psychiatrists. And so we appreciate that section. We also appreciate the section that requires the physician to request consent, but not to restrict participation in telemedicine and healthcare services delivered that way to providing consent. As Ms. Lane described, in the area of healthcare services related to substance abuse and addiction treatment, there are additional federal protections that allow a person to keep those records more confidential than your typical protected health information. And so section 2 on page 2 of the bill, we think, alleviates that concern. So,
thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
That concludes our public hearing. We've got everybody that has signed up to testify. Any reluctant people here that hadn't signed up that want to testify better stick their hand up quick. Seeing none, we're now going to close public hearing. We'd like the bill sponsor to come forward, please. Do we have any final questions for the bill sponsor? Any final comments? Final comments from the bill sponsor?
Thank you for hearing the bill, Senator Stedman. Again, the intent is to help drive down the cost of health care in Alaska. Okay. We believe this gets at that.
This bill, unfortunately, Senator Giesel's gone, but this bill is having cardiac arrest. We are going to work with our board certified nurse practitioner, along with other committee members and their staff, going forward and see if it can be rectified or not. Through the interim.
Thank you,
we'll
Mr.
set this bill aside and we'll be working with your office on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
That, so we'll set that bill aside. Next up, House Concurrent Resolution number 9. Diaphragm Hernia Action Day by Rep. Millett's trustee aide. If you can introduce yourself for the record, who you represent, and speak to the resolution, please.
Absolutely. Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Grace Abbott, staff to Representative Millett, who apologizes that she can't be with us today. Thank you so much for bringing up House Concurrent Resolution 9, which declares April 19th, 2015, as Congenital Diaphragmatic Hernia Action Day, or CDH Action Day. CDH occurs when the fetal diaphragm, the muscle that divides the chest and the abdominal cavity, does not close completely. We do not know what causes CDH nor completely how to cure it. And one in every 2,500 babies is diagnosed with CDH every year, and only about 50% of those survive. Today and every day, at least four families will have their baby diagnosed with CDH. It doesn't get very much attention in the state, Mr. Chair, nor very much research funding in this country, and we hope that with the passage of this resolution, along with other national resolutions, families will learn that they're not alone in this struggle. This day of action will empower Alaskan families to join cities and states across the nation in raising awareness about this devastating disease. Alaska would be joining 14 states and 9 cities thus far, who have also declared that April 19, 2015 would be acknowledged as CDH Action Day. This resolution and disease was brought to Representative Millett's attention by a dear friend of hers who recently joined the 50% of families who have lost a child from this horrible disease. The hope is that with this resolution, Mr. Chair, this would build support in our community for families and their infants who suffer from CDH and push our research community towards finding a cure. Online, I'm joined by Don Williamson from a national support group who can provide more context for the national movement as well.
I got a list here.
Oh, fantastic.
Do we have any initial questions for the resolution sponsor? Senator Stoltz.
I'm just chagrined that I didn't get to see Representative Millett talk about this issue, but that's okay. Very capable person here.
Okay, well now, seeing now we don't have any initial questions from the bill sponsor, we will go to the public hearing portion. We have a couple people signed up in the off-net. If you could identify yourself and who you represent and speak to the resolution and try to hold your comments to a couple minutes, it would be appreciated. We'll start with Todd Mears, please.
Hi, my name is Todd Mears, and I'm the father of, I lost my daughter to CDH, and when we initially found out about this, we had never heard about it, so it was quite the surprise to learn that our baby had a very low survival rate of a disease that we were completely unaware of. And in the state of Alaska, there's not very many cases. The doctors don't know a whole lot about it. So we had to have all of our care done down in Seattle, Washington. We had to fly back and forth for doctor visits. We had to relocate down there about a month before the due date, and then shortly after, my daughter's name is Paisley. About 7 hours, and unfortunately, she didn't make it. So we became, part of that 50% that did not survive. So this is a pretty, this bill is pretty important to me as it's very close to my heart. So that's all from me.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, and I'm sorry to not hear and offer our condolences, Mr. Mears. Next up on the list, Don Williamson from Wake Forest, North Carolina.
Good afternoon. My name is Don Williamson. I'm from CHERUBS. We are an international nonprofit organization that works with families of babies born with congenital diaphragmatic hernia. Right now we work with 5,000 families in 60 countries, but that's just a drop in the bucket to the number of CDH families that are actually been affected. There are 1,600 families affected by CDH every year in the United States. It's just as common as spina bifida and cystic fibrosis, but most people had never heard of it. So we've come to you today to try to raise awareness, because awareness increases research funding for these children. The NIH has very little funding for these children in comparison to cystic fibrosis and spina bifida. And the 50% non-survival rate, that's just not acceptable. That means 800 children die from CDH every year in the United States alone. Worldwide, 6 children are affected every hour and 3 children die. I'm also in the same 50% as Mr. Mears, is losing a child from CDH, and we don't know the cause. So we're hoping that Alaska and other states across the country will work with us. The United States Senate has, and the House has a resolution coming up soon also. Working together, we can raise awareness for these children and also research funds. And I think that's it. Happy to take any questions about CDH if anyone has any.
Well, thank you for your testimony, though. We are for our condolences also to your family. That concludes the public testimony. We have nobody signed up in the LIOs. We have nobody apparently signed up here in the room, very few people in the room. We'll come back, so we'll close the public hearing portion. We'll come back to the committee for questions. We have any questions?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to say, first I first read this, I didn't know what it was, and very, very sobering to actually read the backup, and I sometimes things don't seem as serious as they do, as they are, and very heart-wrenching to hear the story. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Ellis, we've got we can either move this along, or we could set it aside for a day or so and then come back and reconvene the committee. We might be out of work. It's kind of up to the committee members. Senator Ellis, do you have a choice, recommendation?
Mr. Chairman, I've heard the presentation and the public testimony, and I'm perfectly fine if the chair wishes to move it forward.
Okay. Senator Stoltz, what would you?
I concur with the senior member here.
Senator Ellis, can we have a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With that concurrence of the committee, I would move and ask unanimous consent that House Concurrent Resolution Number 9 and all supporting materials be forwarded from this committee to the next committee of referral.
We have a motion to move the resolution to the next committee of referral. Do we have, with individual recommendations and any attached physical notes and comments, we have an objection? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and move this forward. It is the intent of the committee not to move things forward on the first hearing. We're taking special action today to facilitate our colleague in the House dealing with the end of the session calendar and the magnitude of the issue here in the timeline. So with that, I appreciate the committee's work today, and I appreciate the committee's work throughout this half of the legislative session. This will most likely be our last meeting of this 90-day session, but no guarantees depending on how things go. I'll let committee members know, and we will be having worked on several bills, so we'll have a good dialogue with all committee members and their aides as we work out some of the issues on some of these other bills. And if you see any bills that are left in the committee that you think the committee should take further action on, please let the chairman's office know. I would appreciate it. With that, we are adjourned.